The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. I'm waiting for someone to put some food in their mouth before I call on them, but what the hey, I'll go to the left and announce that Professor Kendra Evans is with us here today. Feels like night outside all of a sudden.
I think it is night outside. Yeah. That is some little ping, ping, pinging of that hail.
Mm-hmm. We've got some sort of a storm coming through the metro area exactly as I speak, including the, I think, Joe, you were saying about the lightning bolt. It's like, did someone just dump something gigantic into a dumpster? That's what it sounded like.
That's what it sounded like.
Exactly what it
sounded like.
Exactly like
that.
And it was right by your window, and it was right by my window. Crazy, right?
All the windows and the inside of the buildings.
Yes.
Apparently even the elevator.
Oh my gosh. That's loud.
My bulbs are coming up.
Oh. That's early.
They're not supposed to be coming up.
Oh, that's really early. Yeah. Actually, I saw some daffodils peeking up in our garden.
The weather.
I don't even know what kind of bulbs I have in my new garden.
I guess this
is the time I'll start to find out.
Enjoying spring to some extent, I'm sure, is Professor Joe Avised.
I am. It's been...
You have a thinner sweater on today.
Yeah. I do. And actually, this is a sweater I've had for quite some time.
Okay.
So I was thinking about just how long I've had it, and it's still in better shape than a lot of my other sweaters.
Is this one of those classic stereotypical male, like I've had this since high school kind of thing?
No, this was early on from graduate school.
Okay.
So
okay.
I've been trying to date it exactly when I got it, but it's... It's old. It's one of the older sweaters in my collection.
We need to get some
good
carbon dating on that.
It's amazing how men use clothing as like a benchmark.
It's true.
In their lives, you know.
It's true. Yeah.
I still have several T-shirts from high school. That's the benchmark I was going to use.
I use my Lollapalooza T-shirts.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. I don't wear them, by the way, but I keep them. There's no reason for that either. Professor Heather Hill Vasquez was just telling us about her gardening.
Yes.
Sort of proto-gardening.
I have lots of bulbs that are coming up because of our spring-like weather.
Mm-hmm.
And also, early this morning, I chased two very fat squirrels away. They were starting to dig up said bulbs.
Please.
No.
Yeah, so...
Come on, squirrels.
And they're fat, too.
Yeah.
Yes, the squirrels are very fat right
Gluttony.
Now.
Gluttony.
Is it time for your whatever predatory urine thing again?
I did spray something that kind of smells like that, yes.
Okay.
Yes, my predatory...
This is the fox thing?
No, coyotes.
Coyotes, yes.
Get it right there, Matt.
Okay, all right.
Coyote urine and capsule
whistle
form.
Whistle pig urine.
I hope that they go back down into the ground.
Professor Dave Chow is here from the College for Creative Studies wearing purple.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
Mm-hmm.
It's my Oompa Loompa look, so.
Oompa Loompa.
Oh, maybe not. It's my Violet Beauregard look.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm in a Willy Wonka mindset, that's all.
Mm.
Why is that?
I don't know. I was just surfing the web. I was like, hey, they're the kids from Willy Wonka, that's all, so. Just want to see what they look like nowadays, that's
Tell
all.
Me
this
more.
This is what professors do down there at CCS.
Darn right. Mm-hmm. It's called visual influences, that's all. It's all good.
That's right.
It's all good.
Getting reference.
Folks, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win one of our prizes. You can send us the questions in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/atp or find us on Facebook. For those who weren't with us last week, we got an absolutely, utterly delightful group of questions from Amy Dixon. And it was a Detroit Who Am I quiz, and we were given three or four clues, and we had to guess who they are, people connected to the great city of Detroit. We had just to finish this question to catch everybody up. I was born in 1954 in Monroe. I've been married four times, most notably my second marriage was to a musician. I illustrated that famous musician's album cover for River of Dreams. I was given an unprecedented 25-year contract with CoverGirl.
That's cool.
Do you know this famous Detroiter?
Brinkley? No,
Christy Brinkley.
Yes.
Is that exactly who it is? Now, I believe we had finished our last show by mentioning she's on the cover of the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue with her two daughters, if I remember
no,
correctly.
No, she's not on the cover. She's in.
Oh, she's in the magazine. Oh,
the cover would have been better.
Yeah. Well,
that was a nice story until
that's
now.
What it was.
Yeah.
It was three covers of Kate Upton.
Yes, it ended up being three covers of Kate Upton.
Not that I noticed at 7-Eleven or anything like that at all.
Not at all. I bet Justin Verlander did
Certain
not notice it either.
Certain spouses like Kate Upton as well.
So let's try two more of these, and we'll finish off Amy Dixon's set. These are just really, really well-written questions. I'd love to have questions like this again. I studied at the University of Michigan and Lawrence Tech, but I never graduated from either. I married a former Miss Israel in 1962. I owned A&W, or AA&W restaurant franchise at one point.
Oh, Al Taubman.
Yes, my real estate firm still manages Great Lakes Crossing Outlets in 12 Oaks. That's A. Alfred Taubman. Yep. And of course, our illustrious design professor would know that one, right?
Well, we have a building named after him.
Yeah, that would do it.
So, yeah.
A lot of buildings named after him.
Yeah. Yes.
He's a good donor to a lot of nice institutions.
And the DIA, and mm-hmm. I always felt bad for him, like when they sent him off to jail for the collusion deal with Sotheby's and Christie's.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Why did you feel bad for him?
Because at that point, he was like 70-some years old, and they're putting him to prison.
Yeah.
Like, I feel kind of, I don't know.
No, I get it.
Yeah, to a certain degree, so.
I'm a graduate of Detroit Catholic Central High School and attended the University of Michigan. At one of my previous professions, Kim Worthy was my successor. I was CEO of the Detroit Medical Center. I got 52% of the primary vote via exclusively write-in ballot.
Oh, the mayor.
Yeah.
Duggan?
Mike Duggan.
Yeah, that's right.
It's Mike Duggan. Pretty good, huh?
Kim Worthy?
Yeah.
He was a prosecutor?
Kim Worthy was my successor, so he must have been prosecutor before.
Okay.
Kim Worthy. Boy, she had a very, very quiet profession when she got to that level, didn't she, with all the Kwame Kilpatrick stuff?
Oh, dear Lord.
Pretty crazy. All right, we got a new set of questions here, and they are looking large and in charge.
Uh-oh.
We always get a lot of great background information from Kimberly Richards, our longtime question writer and supplier from out in California.
Yay.
She has sent us a set of questions. There's no real kickoff information. Looks like they're all over the map. It looks like it's going to be fun. Given the attention... What attention to the Electoral College in the last election? It seems like a good time for a bit of this trivia. How many states participated in the 1789 presidential election in which George Washington defeated John Adams?
13.
It's not 13.
9.
It didn't say 9, but you're so close.
Oh,
it says
10.
Oh, okay. Very good. It says 3 states didn't participate in electing the nation's first president were New York, whose legislature failed to appoint electors in time, and North Carolina and Rhode Island, which had not yet decided to ratify the Constitution, which is probably going to keep them out of that conversation. Yeah, kind of interesting. Now, I remember hearing, because remember, I'm married to a historian, that the communication about how a state wished to vote for the president is one of the original ideas why an electoral college was so important. And they literally were, like, behind on their horse trails, and they weren't able to vote by the time they called for a vote on the presidency. Is that right, Heather? Does that make any sense?
That sounds very familiar.
Jim Tubbs would know.
Let's just leave it at that. You know, I feel like Jim Tubbs could get this question right. Next question. What famous American writer coined the phrase Banana Republic?
Oh, indeed.
O. Henry
is who it was. Yeah, William Sidney Porter.
Wonderful candy bar.
It was his 1904 book of short stories, Cabbages and Kings, which he wrote after living in Honduras. The term refers to a small, politically unstable country dependent on a single commodity. A banana republic. And isn't it all... it used to be a clothing line?
It's still there. Okay. Yeah.
It's one of the Gap, Old Navy...
All right, in that corridor.
But those Banana Republic... Map t-shirts of 1991 or 2 are longer the thing.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, we don't wear those with our cargo shorts anymore, do we?
I always thought the best thing about Banana Republic were the catalogs. Do you remember those things?
I guess I don't.
They were like little safari journals, all hand-drawn. Remember those?
I know what you mean.
Like Elaine's employer on Seinfeld.
Very much Mr. Peterman.
Mr. Peterman.
Yes, the Peterman catalog. The Urban Sombrero.
The Urban Sombrero.
In which country... is it illegal to sell or import chewing gum?
The Philippines?
No, it doesn't say that. But you're in the right nick of the woods.
Okay, because wasn't the Philippines the one where that kid got caned for chewing
gum?
That's
Singapore.
Singapore, okay.
Singapore is correct.
Oh, okay, there we go. I knew it was some Asian state that frowned upon chewing.
It says here, there's a ban on selling... or importing chewing gum into Singapore, which is strictly enforced. The sale of gum was banned in 1992 after gum was used to shut down the country's public transportation system being stuck on door sensors. The punishment for smuggling gum into the country is a year in jail and a $5,500 fine. Since 2004, only chewing gum of therapeutic value, oh my, is allowed into Singapore under the, quote, regulation of imports and exports of chewing gum regulations.
What, like Nicorette? I mean...
Yes, and the official name does include the use of the word regulations twice, Kimberly has told us. Such gum can be bought only from a doctor by prescription. Okay, now what therapy would you need?
Like I said, the only thing I can think of is Nicorette.
Well, anxiety. Some people chew it for anxiety.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Okay.
Oh wait, yeah. Everybody's got a thing, and that's their thing.
As we eat the therapy animals,
you know, if only outlaws have gum, then gum would be outlawed or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Who sang "God Bless America" at a star-studded 1973 White House banquet honoring recently returned Vietnam prisoners of war?
Janis Joplin.
Mm-mm. 1973. I feel like Janis Joplin may have been dead by then.
Johnny Cash.
No, not Johnny Cash, but a very, very famous composer primarily. But he also
Irving Berlin.
It was Irving Berlin, yeah. This is the song's 85-year-old composer Irving Berlin did this.
As thunder hits the building.
That was his last public appearance before he passed away, which is why people remember the star-studded White House banquet of 1973. What instrument is generally used to help tune other instruments in an orchestra?
Tuning fork?
Oboe?
It says the oboe is what it says. And of course, Professor Evans' musical background comes into play. Traditionally, it's the job of the principal oboist, or boist, to help tune the orchestra to an A before the beginning of a concert. Does that sound about right?
That is true. And in the wind ensemble, it's principal clarinetists who may cue the principal tuba. Tubist. Noun of tuba.
I'm thinking that oboist is a very funny word at this point because it looks like oboist.
I remember as a little kid, I always thought it was oboy.
Oboy.
Oboist.
Well, it beats flautist. It sounds like flatulence.
We can say, yes.
Let's not go down that
path. Okay, yeah.
We're going to go there.
Yeah, you weren't here last week for that god-awful diatribe.
So I hear.
Yes. 14 bouts. Per person.
Yeah.
Okay. Per day.
There are two states in the union that do not allow their citizens to pump their own gasoline.
New Jersey.
Oregon.
And Oregon. Yes, that is correct.
We've had that a couple times.
Yep. The ban in New Jersey went into effect 1949, Oregon 51. The purpose of these laws was to protect consumers and gas station owners from costly and possibly deadly accidents. Long ago, all gas stations, of course, were full service. The first self-service station was in California in 1947, and the idea caught on. Only Oregon and New Jersey decided to keep doing things the old way. Each statute has stood up to several challenges in those two states. One slight change was made in 2001 in Oregon when motorcyclists successfully got the law tweaked to allow them, for some reason, to pump their own gas. That's pretty interesting.
Well, when you think about where the gas tank is...
Makes sense.
Yeah, and I was like, whoa, hey, easy there, buddy.
Well, I'm assuming that people would get off of the bike first, but I tell you what, ponder that while we take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
That was good for the self-esteem.
Yeah, wasn't it?
Our next set of questions comes from Keith Hedrick of Orange, California.
Yes.
How about that? And he says, I have enclosed 10 quotes. You need to figure out who said it. Yeah, right.
Keep hoping.
We'll take it, love.
You were working on your taxes, weren't you?
You need 6 out of 10 correct in order to win.
Okay. Six? This guy has low standards.
He's serious.
That's good.
That's why he writes to us.
He's a realist.
Who said? I have taken more out of alcohol than alcohol has taken out of me.
Joel Cowers.
No, it's British.
Oh.
But it's a statesman.
Churchill.
Okay. That's right.
Churchill was at a party one night, and this woman came up. You know that story?
Yes, but tell it.
Yeah.
Tell
it. She was being obnoxious, and she said, "You know, Mr. Churchill, you're drunk." And he said, "Yes, madam, that's true, and you're ugly. But in the morning, I shall be sober, and you will still be ugly."
This wasn't Queen Elizabeth, was it?
he didn't know who it was.
And we are back with some great questions from Kimberly Richards, continuing with the cacophony and the craziness. The state of Hawaii has one area code. What is it?
Oh, boy. 709?
Nope.
Oh.
Need to go a little higher.
874.
I'm giving it to you. Oh. It's 808 okay. is what it is.
Oh, all right.
The telephone area code covers the inhabited, developed, and uninhabited areas of the Hawaiian Islands out to Midway Island and Wake Island. Despite the state's rapid growth and proliferation, of course, of mobile devices, particularly in Honolulu and Oahu, the single area code is projected to be enough to serve Hawaii until 2029. Because of the small population, Hawaii is only one of 12 states with one area code. Do you think you could name six of the other 12?
No, I can't.
Vermont. I could, yeah.
Vermont.
Vermont is one of them.
Nebraska?
No, Nebraska's not.
Wyoming.
North Dakota.
Wyoming is on the list, and so is North Dakota.
Montana.
South Dakota.
Hold on. I'll slow it down, Matt. It's going down.
Rhode Island.
Sorry. I got Vermont, South Dakota, North Dakota, and Wyoming, and Rhode Island.
So, no, Montana?
Montana. Yep, so you got them. The missing ones are New Hampshire, Alaska, Delaware, Idaho, Maine.
Oh, okay.
That's it. I want an Alaska area code. I want to sound cosmopolitan.
I think you should have your own area code, Dave.
Actually, yeah, we had a conversation about this. There's one time. Do you guys remember when 313 became like 810?
Oh, and then 248.
Yeah, at one point, I had 5 phone numbers registered to me.
Oh, my gosh.
My work phone, my home phone, my pager, my cell phone, my fax.
Oh, yes. I remember the days of pagers. Oh, I remember pagers. Them well.
I had a lecture at a middle school, and I had my pager on. First thing the kid looks at me, it's career day. Are you a drug dealer?
Oh,
he thought
nice.
I was a drug dealer or a doctor. Somehow he didn't think I was a doctor, but I thought I was a drug dealer. Thanks, kid.
Drug dealer makes more?
Probably. Drives a nice car, but I wasn't driving a nice car, so.
We're being joined by Professor Stephanie Conant, chair of the biology department.
Hey, she didn't get struck by lightning.
I'm soaked from, like, the knees down.
That's all right.
The dents on the head are good.
We're glad to have you either way. We're taking some crazy questions here from Kimberly Richards. Stephanie, our next question is, what was the first human invention that broke the sound barrier?
Ooh,
that really fast car in the desert?
Not a bullet, no.
An arrow, a slingshot,
a rocket, some sort of missile?
No, it's very rudimentary, almost cave person-like.
Almost what person?
A hand clap?
Cave person.
Wheel. Cave person.
A rock.
A slingshot.
I was going to say a rock.
A musical note.
Broke no.
It says
barrier.
Here the first human invention that broke the sound barrier was a whip.
Oh,
the cracking sound a bullwhip makes when properly wielded is in fact a sonic boom. Sonic boom is the sound associated with the shock waves created by an object traveling through the air faster than the speed of sound.
How is that caveman-like?
You don't think cavemen invented whips? Who invented
I'm
the whip?
I'm not seeing the connection.
Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Anybody here want an orange whip? Orange whip, orange whip, orange whip. Come on.
I love orange whips.
Oh, by the way, what is the end of the whip called? That little tassel.
Painful.
Yes, absolutely.
The crack?
It's called the cracker. Yeah, it's actually called the cracker. Yay. Very well done. It's called the cracker.
Yeah, hit me with the Ritz.
The pagers and the phone numbers there come through. Somebody had mistaken Professor Chow, Stephanie, as a drug dealer.
Well, but obviously.
He's not
anymore.
Instead
like recently?
Doctor. Yeah, instead of a doctor.
Instead of a doctor.
Yeah.
Today?
No.
Pagers were involved, so it definitely wasn't recent.
Yeah.
Haagen-Dazs brand of ice cream came from what country?
America. Germany.
It's definitely the United States. Sounds pretty exotic.
It sounded exotic. I think that's why they went with the name.
But the brand was actually created in the Bronx in New York City. They invented the Danish-sounding Haagen-Dazs as a tribute to Denmark's exemplary treatment of its Jewish peoples during the Second World War, and as a tribute to Reuben's feeling that Denmark was well-known for dairy. Sure. Included an outline map of Denmark on early labels. However, Danish has neither an umlaut nor digraph Z's, nor does the name Haagen-Dazs have any meaning in the language or etymology of that country. Oh, interesting.
It just sounds highbrow.
Yeah. Mattis's daughter claims that her father sat at the kitchen table for hours saying nonsensical words until he settled on Haagen-Dazs.
Here, have another drink. We'll come up with some more fun names.
Oh, wow. If you ain't eating wham, you ain't eating ham. That's all I've got to say to that.
It works, though. People think they're fancy when they have
totally.
Mr. Blandings builds his dream house.
Oh, very, very nice reference there, Professor Hill-Vasquez. Wonderful. Yeah, I just there's something about the way things are phrased. I always go for my students to Amazon. You know, they're like, we want a store that everybody knows they can get everything from A to Z on. Well, what words have those letters in them? It's just silliness.
Right.
Absolutely crazy. How many pounds of pressure per square inch does it take to break the shell of a macadamia nut, the toughest of all nuts?
175.
It's higher than
Where's Prasad when we need him?
1,000.
It's lower than 1,000, higher than 250. It's 300 PSI to break a macadamia nut. You would need approximately the same PSI to crush an unopened beer can or a human throat. Oh, thank you. It's also around the minimum pressure required for a paintball gun to function.
Oh.
And the approximate pressure of a typical bedroom window is subjected to in a 100-mile-per-hour hurricane.
You can shoot a water bottle rocket with just 35 PSI, I've learned this week.
That is however. For sure.
Wow.
That is for sure.
From your children?
Yeah.
That's the water is incompressible okay. little pumpy thing? Mm-hmm. I love those rockets.
My daughter cool. tells me that, and she watches it, there's like this thing you can watch on the internet of things being smashed or pushed
yes.
or pulverized. Yeah,
in the hydraulic the press?
Hydraulic press channel.
The hydraulic press. Okay, so I yeah. guess I'm behind the
it's
times.
It's tons of fun.
Yes, it is.
It's oh, tons
it's tons of fun.
Of fun.
That was really harsh, that well, pun. Oh, my goodness.
Well, this is better than the Ooh. Dropping the, was it the fiery ball of nickel?
And oh, yeah.
Dropping
yeah, they actually got those two guys together, and they did. Oh. Hydraulic presses the hot ball of nickel.
I love that.
Oh, jeez.
Mm-hmm. Evidently, Matt also watches this channel.
I do watch this channel. I love to watch things.
The Hydraulic Press Channel, or HPC.
That is exactly what it's called, the HPC. And the gentleman has a rather loving,
they didn't think a lot about it. They just
near
kind of
stereotypical Russian accent. And he's like, today we are going to press a lit firework. He just puts it in there.
Seriously?
It's awesome. It's
awesome. So it has voice yeah. accompaniment?
Clearly this guy is you doing something to. Like after hours at work. That's what oh I'm saying.
We hope it's his press and not the company's press or something
I don't know.
Like that.
The press
we
presses.
Are going to press
yeah, at least the flaming ball of nickel you can make your own, you know? So I mean...
That is one of my favorite channels. If you want a good opener, check them. I'm squishing an entire bag of gummy bears.
All right, I'm looking it up right now. Not.
It's awesome.
Careful, we could be getting hydraulic press questions in a couple of weeks.
It's true. It's true.
We okay. better watch ourselves.
Send all your hydraulic press questions to
the HPC.
Yes, we do. Darn right.
No,
yes,
at that point, he won't be a guest.
We've had this before, and I feel like it changes sort of, you know, day to day, year to year. But what's the most common street name? According to the U.S. Census Bureau in the United States.
Main, Broad.
Center, First Avenue, Second Avenue.
Second is first.
Second is uh-huh. first.
Absolutely. Second it's the most common street name found in cities throughout the country. The second is third. The third is first. The fourth is fourth. And the fifth is a tie between Park and Fifth.
My brain hurts
How
after
Main
that
Street
one.
Number
Main is number 7, it says. The remaining three in the top 10 are 6th, Oak,
and who's 7. On first?
No, see, I remember like in Medicine Hat and Calgary and places like that, there would be a town center, and there'd be like 2nd Street North, 2nd Street South, right, and all things right. like that. But the only thing is, if you don't know where the center of town is, you're doomed.
I've mentioned this before. The most confusing city I've ever been to having to navigate in a car is Ann Arbor, Michigan. But second most is Salt Lake City. Oh. They have east-west running streets called North Temple and South Temple.
Oh, for the love of...
And they have a dividing line through the middle of the city that separates those streets into their east and west sides. So where do you live, Kendra? I live at 300 East North Temple. My brain just exploded. I'm like, I have no idea where you live. I can't even plot it out. Give me a mile road.
Nashville is very confusing in that it's the same road that has several names. So you'll be on it and it will just change names. And then you'll end up back on the road you're supposed to. And so, like, even the GPS maps.
Nashville is
very tough.
So is it like 8 Mile?
No, it's like Hickory Boulevard. It has like 7 names, but it actually just circles name. All.
It's kind of like Outer Drive, except for it changes names.
Yeah.
Wow.
So like 16 Mile?
Yeah. Big Beaver Metropolitan.
Come on.
Parkway.
Greatest piece of Detroit trivia. What are the five names for 16 Mile?
Big Beaver.
Big Beaver. 16 Mile.
Metro Parkway.
Quarton.
Quarton.
What's Quarton?
It's over by West Bloomfield.
Really?
And
Telegraph. And M. Oh, no,
starts
no.
with a W.
W.
Washington.
Walnut Lake Road.
Walnut Lake. Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Gotcha.
I'm sure that's exactly what Judge Woodward intended. for that road. In how many professional championship title bouts did boxing great Muhammad Ali fight under his birth name of Cassius Clay?
Not that many.
Two.
Not that many is true. Two, I'm giving it to you, was one. First only, February 25th, 1964. He defeated Sonny Liston to become the world heavyweight champion. Soon after the match, Clay announced he had joined the Nation of Islam and taken a Muslim name. The greatest ever, he called himself. And he was. In the world of finance, what is the meaning of the term Burgernomics?
Economics dealing with fast food franchises.
Is it B-E-R-G-E-R?
Yes, I almost said bourgeoisnomics because I'm testing my new bifocals today.
Burgernomics.
Burgernomics is definitely what it says. And you're really close, Kendra. Really, really close.
Based on how much fast food sells, how well the economy is doing?
It's actually very, very specific. Using the cost of a Big Mac in different countries to determine the purchasing power between those nations. It has been coined by The Economist, the Big Mac Index.
But what about the Junior Mac and the Double Mac?
And the Grande. The Grande, yeah. No, you're
now what are they going to do?
It's absolutely.
And what about countries that don't sell those?
What about the variability there aren't they're called the, within the country?
Oh, that's right.
Grand Royale.
Yes. No, I was thinking about India. Where
they're called healthy.
It's actually a good point to make,
the
though,
Royale
Kendra.
With cheese.
There you go.
You had said about within the country, the variations. I was just having this discussion with someone who also grew up in Detroit the other day that we had way more independently owned McDonald's franchises when I was growing up, and they would have wildly different prices than the mainstream ones.
Do you know Mitch Hedberg?
Oh, wait. Mitch Hedberg? Oh, I
spaghetti
love Mitch Hedberg.
And blankets?
What?
So he has this whole joke about the tagline that like individual franchises may vary, and so he says, what if you go into McDonald's and they say, we don't sell hamburgers and fries, we sell spaghetti and blankets.
Sure, I'll buy
that.
He's
so great.
I just remember there being some serious like 25 cent cheeseburgers or something during the 80s, and that was kind of a big deal. I just gotta say, you wanted to go to that McDonald's.
No Coke, Pepsi.
That's right.
Cheeseburger, Pepsi. Cheeseburger, cheeseburger.
Well, my cousins in Edmonton own their own McDonald's.
Really? So,
yeah, they do.
And they set their own places?
Yeah, my cousin's kid just opened his own store.
Awesome.
Lucky little devil.
Awesome.
Cool.
What Major League Baseball team's cap did actor Jack Nicholson refuse to wear in the 2006 Oscar-winning film The Departed?
Ooh. Red Sox.
Yeah, Red Sox. Yeah. Although the movie's set in Boston, he's a longtime Yankees fan. A point on that. However, for the moment, it's time for us to say goodbye, Professor Chow.
See you.
Professor Hill Vasquez.
Goodbye.
Professor Abbasid.
Take care.
Professor Conant.
Bye.
Professor Evans.
Bye.
And now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Tweet to us on Twitter @AskTheProfessor or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed to the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced by Javon Holland, technically directed by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mile.